This is Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson. Sponsored by Know Better, Do Better, KBDB. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Dr. Phil Knight.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for listening. For over a decade, Jerry Brisson and I have been chasing the same idea. Our first show was called Food for Thought. Then came Food First Michigan. And today, it's Food Secure Nation. The names have changed, but the purpose hasn't. We've always believed that changing the conversation is the first step toward changing the future. Years ago, Jerry said something that has stayed with me ever since. Jerry said, until food banks can artfully discuss the impact the food makes in people's lives, we will struggle to communicate our value and our impact. And at the time, I thought he was talking about storytelling. Today, I think he's talking about something else entirely. Because the conversations we have shape how we think. How we think shapes what we measure. And what we measure influences where we invest our time, resources, and our energy. So today, we're going to explore what it takes to change the conversation, not by ignoring the incredible work that's already been done, but by building on it. We'll talk about how better questions lead to better thinking. Better thinking leads to better decisions, and better decisions create better outcomes. Welcome to Food Secure Nation. Welcome back, everyone. Glad you're with us. I'm with Jerry Brisson in our studio. And Jerry, great to see you.
It is always a pleasure, Doctor, and it is a beautiful day. How could it not be?
Well, you know, let's go back a few days, because in the monologue, I talked about how we started this over a decade ago when we had Food for Thought as the title of our show, and then Food First Michigan, and now Food Secure Nation. And certainly the geographical boundaries of our show and its reach have expanded greatly. And I think we're pretty proud of that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I don't know much about shampoo. If you looked at me, you'd say you don't know anything about shampoo because there's not much hair there to deal with. But what I do know about shampoo is this: wash, rinse, repeat. That's what I know about shampoo. And the truth is, in so many ways, that's what you have to keep doing that process. We started with food for thought. We learned some things, but the world changed too, right? So then we did Food First Michigan, which was wildly successful in terms of the attention that we were able to garner for food security in the state of Michigan. And now we're saying, okay, wash, rinse, repeat. Time to take this national, right? Time to have this conversation on a national level. And part of the reason for that is on a national level, things have been changing, and there needs to be a way to incorporate new thinking and new ideas into this bigger picture. So we like to say refocus, reset, reestablish, wash, rinse, repeat. It's all the same.
Yeah, it sounds good. And, you know, I think one of the consistent things for the show, regardless of its name, has been we wanted to change the conversation that people were having. Because I think when we started well over a decade ago, that part of the conversation was, to be quite frank, hopeless. And hope should be loud.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, if you want to do something significant, it better be. Otherwise, you're just going to putter along, right?
Well, I think that's the point. We wanted to have the conversation with people at a different level. And what we found is not only would you have the conversation about food security at a different level, you would begin to have it with different people.
So trying to bookend this a little bit, it starts, our work on this started right after the Great Recession, and we continued it right through COVID, right? I mean, but you think about all the things that changed in between those two bookends, right? Mm. And then the changes that have happened since COVID that are creating more opportunities and challenges for people who are invested in food security. And so you can't keep doing the same things over and over, even though those things were great. The expansion of food security work between the Great Recession and COVID was incredible. The capacity of food banks particularly to do their work, but also government programs and other things that kicked in during that span of time made a significant difference in people's lives, and we have to celebrate that. But some of that is eroding. Some of that is harder now because of other changes and you know, new cost, you know, realities. You know, inflation, especially food inflation, has taken its toll, and it's harder to do what's always been done. So that means you got to look at it again. But beyond that, you get smarter as you do the work. We started this work thinking about two of what we now know are six dimensions of food security. And all we were talking about was, is there food available and do people have access to it?
Right.
Well, we implemented things to improve both of those significantly and said it's still not quite right. We got to make sure if it's available and people have access to it, that it's food that's appropriate for them, and that the systems make them feel respected, and that if you need early intervention but people feel insulted when they walk in the door, they're not coming back. You don't get any progress that way, right? You really have to think more dimensionally than availability and access. And that's how you move ahead. That's how you innovate. That's how you make systems better for people. And that's how impact grows.
Well, so what you're describing there to me is occasionally circumstances dictate that you need to refocus on the work and what the work should look like. I think one of my mentors used to say that if a leader has no followers, they're only taking a walk.
I do like that. So, I've taken many walks, and, you know, the walks aren't bad, but if you want to be a leader, it's not quite enough, is it?
Right. You got to have some followers with you, at least. And so I think that's what we're talking about in part today, is that the leaders of this work across the nation occasionally have to take stock of the environment around them, because, as you like to say, perception is reality, and they have to refocus. And some things that used to work are no longer applicable. They're no longer having the impact that they used to have, and so we have to refocus.
Yeah. Another way I like to think of it is you have a garage, right? And when you first get a garage, man, you fill it up. You got a use for it, and you fill it up, and then it's full. But you got more stuff coming. The stuff doesn't stop coming, right? More and more stuff comes. Well, now you can't just deal with an empty space. You have stuff in there that you've got to do stuff with, right? So moving forward, You have to think of it as a refocusing, because you've got to look at all the stuff and say, which of this stuff is still important to keep? Which of this stuff do we have to move out? And what do we have room for the new stuff that has to come in so we can make the best use of this garage? True for garages as much as it is for food security.
Well, okay, with your garage analogy, I'm just thinking that in my last house, I didn't have any room for my car in the garage. So, and the purpose of the garage was to store the car, and so, but it stored everything else. But that's probably another conversation. So, Jerry, in the last few moments of this segment here, let me try to get your perception on a couple of things about refocusing. There is a lot of conversation across the nation about this issue of food security or food insecurity, hunger. So you're proposing at No Better, Do Better that we do something about that. And that is, we scan those headlines and find out who's saying what so we can better understand the national conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's one of the challenges that we have is when we talk about the work on the ground, you know, the work of feeding people and providing food, oftentimes what precedes the work is some kind of statement about how times are bad, some kind of statement about how this is an urgent need right now. And part of the debilitating effect of that dynamic is it makes you as an organization look like you haven't solved anything, and it could very well make the people you serve look like they're not moving forward. Every urgent message leaves the impression not just that there's a need today, but that you haven't dealt with the problem yet. Right. Mm. So I think
so that could become a credibility issue.
And I think it creates stigma. Right. I think that dynamic creates something that isn't going to move forward the solution to the problem, because if you don't have faith in the people you're helping, how long are you going to help them?
Right.
Eventually, you'll do the minimum because you just don't believe. Right. So that's an example of how headlines capture and create a perception, even if the articles, even if what follows those headlines is more substantial than that. So many instances, people are reading the headlines and not reading the other pieces. And so looking at what's in the headlines about food insecurity gives you an impression of this is what people's perception will be based on what's being said in the headlines. And so scanning those headlines and starting to do a real analysis of what do they say and how often do we say things like, this is worse than ever? Or how often do we say things like, the problem is so big and we need your help, right? It's not untrue. But if that's the perception that we're building out in the world, that times are bad and they're not getting better, eventually I think we'll lose momentum.
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack there, and I appreciate you being candid about it. But let's just, we got a couple seconds left here in this segment, but let me just say it like this. When we say we're putting the person experiencing hunger at the center of all we do, and we only represent them to our funders as needy,
aren't going to like it, are they?
Well, it's inconsistent.
Yeah.
At best. When we're really talking about a segment of the population in America that is probably some of the most resilient people that we have. And that's the way we need to be talking. So I think our values and our conversation have to match up with one another. That's Jerry Brisson. I'm Dr. Phil Knight. We're going to pick this up on the other side of this break. Don't go away. Come back and be with us.
You're listening to Food Secure Nation with Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson. Sponsored by Know Better, Do Better.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. I have the founder of Know Better, Do Better, LLC, in the studio with me.
Wait. As do I.
So why did we start this company?
Well, you know, it was time to take all the, you know, between us, you know, 80 years of experience and try to start putting it together in a way that said, here's what we can add to the conversation now. You know, this wisdom doesn't last forever. Nobody's wisdom lasts forever. And so how do we take the wisdom we've gained in all these years of working with people and working with organizations and do something with it that's meaningful and part of, I think, a legacy not of ours, but of the work, right? And so I think that we agreed that some of the things that we've done, like introducing people to the leaders of this work, ought to keep going. People ought to meet the wonderful people who commit their lives and their handful of life, as you like to say, to solving food insecurity. And there's a lot of them, and we have a lot of them. Not this week. This week, it's you and me. We can talk about what that is, but our guests
<They're>
are
awesome.
Remarkable. And so, you know, we think that's still important, but with that, we have to be reminded of what is the work today? What is the challenge that is being faced by those wonderful people dedicated to making a difference? And how do we talk about that in a meaningful way and in a way that encourages innovation and progress? And so that felt like the right thing to do at this stage in our careers. I still feel really good about it after, you know, 6 months. We launched 6 months ago. And I feel great about how much we've learned even in the last 6 months as we keep pushing for greater clarity and greater impact.
Let me see if I can illustrate what you just said. So most people won't remember this, but the first food bank in America was St. Mary's in Phoenix, Arizona, 1967. For those of you who are in Michigan and listening to the show here on WJR, our home station, Gleaners Community Food Bank is the first food bank built in 1977, established in 1977. And after that, food banks just kind of started popping up. So we had a food bank on the other side of the state, had a founder, and he lasted. In fact, that food bank's just now on their third CEO. It was started in the mid-'80s. That original founder said two things when he retired and walked away. And these are the two things he said. He told his successor, he said, there are two things that will remain constant. One is you will never have to buy food because there's enough food that can be donated to feed the community. The second thing is, he said, you'll never have to fundraise because the network paying in to help supply the food to their communities will be enough. And neither one of those things are true.
No, they're sure not. And he, I think no one could have anticipated just how much bigger food banks would be from then till now.
Right.
And how much more we would be able to do. But they didn't consider that dollar stores would start to take up a lot of the shrink, if you will, that food manufacturers were having that used to go to food banks. And so dollar stores and low-cost food stores came into being and took 80% of the donated food from food that food banks were getting.
Right.
Now, at the same time, they were adding a lot more to the food supply. And so what that those businesses aren't a curse. They're a blessing to people in many respects. It's the best store people have close to them to shop. So it's not a matter of looking at that as a bad thing for the community, but it did change how food banks had to think about what food is available. And so food banks have gotten better. They started doing food rescue on a much bigger scale when the dollar stores came and took food from the food manufacturers. Food rescue started to really grow, and I think food rescue is now almost half of all the food that gets distributed through the food bank network.
Well, I think that illustration, that story from our history, illustrates the reason we need to not only refocus but also reset. Because now, as you said in the earlier segment, we looked at primarily two of the six dimensions of food security. And now this reset causes us to go, ooh, we're going to have to look at these other four and get those incorporated into our work, into the community, in order for us to actually move the needle and create a food secure nation.
Well, I think the biggest underlying concern with the need to reset is that in the last 20 years, the amount of food distributed through government programs and food distribution programs like through food banks has grown tremendously to the magnitude of 20 or 30 times what it was 20 years ago. But food insecurity has stayed roughly between 10 and 15% of the population.
Right.
Even though there's a lot more resources available for people than there used to be. So if you just take one step back and say, wait a minute, really? We're doing that much more, and yet this food insecurity rate isn't changing dynamically as a result? You got to say there's something else going on. What else is going on that can help us understand how to make life permanently better for the people who are experiencing food insecurity? So I think we can celebrate tremendously the successes we've had in making food more available and accessible to people. The numbers are outstanding. The number of people helped has been way more than what the founders of food banking ever imagined it would be. And so there's a lot to celebrate in those successes. But the food insecurity rate tells us flat out those successes aren't enough. So as we start looking at what else we need to do, we don't want to get rid of what we've learned to do well. We got to keep doing that. We have to keep meeting people where they are as they're going through their life and now think more deeply. So those other four dimensions, agency and utilization, have everything to do with, is this working for people? Are they empowered by it? Is it making their what they need based on their own determination work for them? And then stability and sustainability has to do with with how long is this resource going to be available, and is there damage being done by the processes that are in place that might be damage to the environment or you know, other social consequences to the things that we do. So we have to look at all four of those in addition to availability and access in order to get a better picture of what is the whole answer if we want a food secure nation.
So what you're saying to me, Jerry, is that, by the way, do you remember saying that quote?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Until food banks can artfully discuss the impact the food makes in people's lives, we will struggle to communicate our value and impact. I thought it was great. So what you're saying to me is that better frameworks produce better questions.
Produce better questions and make you dig deeper so it produces better understanding.
Well, and then better questions produce better decisions.
Yep.
And better decisions create better outcomes. And that's the transition we're in when we talk about resetting. It's not enough anymore to talk about outputs. Everyone wants to talk about outcomes.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And just to try to put some, you know, understanding to the difference between an output and an outcome. An output might be the pounds of food that were distributed. That's an output. The outcome might be a child learned in school.
Right.
Right. The output might be the number of people served. An outcome might be the number of people that got a job because they weren't so worried about feeding their family that they couldn't focus on training. Right. And so you outputs are important because they do create a framework and an understanding for the specific things that have to be done in order to get outcomes. But by themselves, they don't say enough about the success people are having and the dynamic changes that are positive in people's lives because of the work.
We got to get out of this segment, but I'm going to just hearken back to people who listen to the show and scroll and find us on the podcast and all that great stuff. Go back and listen to the show with Claire Babineau Fontenot, former CEO for Feeding America, who came in and talked about agency. And I think that's Claire's legacy at Feeding America National Organization, is that she truly put the person, the family experiencing hunger, at the center of our decision making. And when we do that to what you just explained, it is very clear to say that outputs are good and not enough, because we have to understand the difference the food makes in a person's life. We're going to talk about this and more in the next segment. Come back and be with Jerry and I. Thanks for being with us. Jerry Brisson, Dr. Phil Knight. You're listening to Food Secure Nation, formerly
Food First Michigan.
And
Food for Thought.
In fact, Jerry, I have a book right here called Food for Thought, Understanding Older Adult Food Insecurity. This is by the professors Colleen Heflin and Madonna Harrington Meyer. And they're going to be guests on the show with us in August.
More food for thought. Yay.
So what's really cool is we're going to be able to say Madonna's going to be on the show. Dr. Phil and Madonna in the same studio. So in this show, we're talking about how we, as a nationwide work, no matter where you're at in this huge family of people who are working to create a food secure nation, that we need to refocus, we need to reset. We've understood that outputs are great and not enough, and therefore we need to really be able to measure outcomes. But now we want to talk about a third part of this work that we see as a natural evolution, adjustment to how we think. And that is, we need to reestablish, and that is to create excitement and alignment around the new vision of believing that this is actually possible. And we've said for years on this show that you'll never solve a problem. Okay, I got to give you credit. It's something you've said for years. You'll never solve a problem, start to work on a problem, that you don't believe can be solved.
Yeah, that's right. You'll run out of energy for that pretty quick, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things, and we talked about it on the show a little bit, is having faith. This very show, having faith in the people that are being served, right? And believing in them. And how the messaging that we use often does not create a feeling of faith and confidence in the people we serve. So I want to give an example, a counterpoint, right? How do we talk about people who need help? And one of my favorite illustrations is to think about a juggler. Because any individual juggler can juggle about five things at once. There are some people that can juggle six or seven things at once, but not for very long, right? But most jugglers can confidently manage five things for a good long time, right? And so when you see a juggler and you see someone throwing another thing into their routine and they catch it and you go, oh, and then they throw the next thing and they catch it, you go, oh, and then someone throws the next thing and they don't catch it and the thing goes crashing down and you don't go, that lazy son of a gun, why is he not motivated? And yet, this is what we do with people who need help, right? They are out in their life juggling a lot of things. In fact, if you saw how many things they were juggling, you would feel very similarly to how you feel when you see a juggler with six or seven things all in the air, torches and bowling balls and, you know, eggs and all at the same time. And you go, that's amazing. How can anybody do that? And in so many ways, people with very low income are managing their life with that level of amazement that when we see it, we go, how are they doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And then they get one more ball, and yep, things fall. Things don't move forward the way you would hope, and things become desperate for people. But if we see that as a failure, rather than as an example of how people can only juggle so much before things just fall apart, then we've missed the main part of the story, which is how exciting is it that people can do as much as they do, right? Mm. So reestablishing, once we refocus and then reset, we've got to have a legitimate framework for people to understand all that refocus and resetting, putting people being served in the center of the conversation in a way that uplifts their capacity, not in a way that denigrates them or creates more stigma. Because in doing that, we create a movement of confidence and faith in the whole community, not in some and not others.
I like that, Jerry. That's really good. That last statement is really powerful. I'm not going to ask you to say it again.
I might get it wrong.
But it's how we invest and come alongside of people. It's not top down. It's come alongside. And I think that is a reestablishing. I'm going to give you kind of the opposite of the juggler. Because there's a story in a very, very, very old piece of literature that talks about talents.
I think I know this piece of literature.
Yeah, somebody got a good many talents. Somebody got a middle-sized amount of talents, and somebody only got one. And the moral of that story, of that parable, is simply, too much has been given, much will be required. You know.
So I thought that was from Spider-Man.
No, it could be. If they did, they plagiarized it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I know the guy who wrote this one.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that was the entire basis for the creation of what was then called the welfare system. Now it's gone through a lot of different names since then, but it's how we use the wealth of the nation to uplift every citizen. That was the purpose in its original form. And I think probably we've gotten away from some of that intent and that purpose. And so I think that it's time to not only refocus and not only reset, but also reestablish. What are the tools we have in this toolbox? Because in the end, we want to make sure that we're not only just doing good work, but we're doing the best work that we can.
Yeah, and that takes practice and more practice and more practice. I mean, and when we talk about storytelling in language, you've got to repeat things a lot. And again, last segment we talked about the looking at headlines and seeing what headlines say. And what we're going to find, I know, just from the little bit of experimenting that we've done with the headlines so far, is that a lot of the headlines say a lot of the same things a lot of the time. But that's not a bad thing. Because that actually is what we want for the next thing. We want to get those headlines to change because the way we've reset and refocused can help us reestablish language that can explain better and more completely the impact the work has, not just on the people who are hungry, but on the whole of the society. Everybody benefits when the society is food secure. Everybody benefits, not just the people who are food insecure. But you need language for that, and you got to practice it, and you got to repeat it. And if you want people to really understand it, it has to be simple and repeatable. Simple and repeatable. Wash, rinse, repeat. That's what it says on the shampoo bottle. Even I remember it. And I don't need hardly any shampoo.
Well, that's how ideas become culture, through repetition and practice. And the result is the conversation will change. Well, Jerry, I think it's time for...
What Vera says. And, you know, Vera says some pretty interesting things, you know. She does tell us beforehand what she's going to say, I have to admit. So I will say this. As we look at our process here of refocusing, resetting, and then reestablishing, Vera found some pretty interesting research on the six-dimensional framework, and here she is.
Hello, partners. Using the six-dimensional framework of food security is better than using just the two dimensions of food availability and access. Because food insecurity in the United States is not only about whether food exists and whether people can obtain it. It is also about the other four dimensions. Here's an example. A household that has enough food, but poor nutritional outcomes remains vulnerable, even if it is technically fed. Addressing utilization helps move policy from food quantity to prioritizing food quality as well. The most immediate impact may come from the agency dimension. Research consistently shows that stigma influences whether eligible individuals actually use food assistance programs. I found evidence that two communities with identical levels of food availability and program access may experience different outcomes. People may avoid SNAP, food pantries, or other supports because they anticipate judgment, feel shame, distrust institutions, or believe the services do not reflect their needs. I also found evidence that when programs become more trusted, culturally responsive, and dignity-centered, participation rates are likely to increase. Early intervention becomes more common. Households may seek help before reaching crisis conditions, and program effectiveness improves. The research shows that if policymakers, nonprofits, healthcare systems, and communities fully adopt all six dimensions of the food security framework, that effects would be gradual but substantial. The largest near-term gains would likely come from agency and trust, because many existing resources are underutilized due to stigma and institutional barriers. The largest long-term gains would likely come from stability and sustainability, because they address the causes of recurring food insecurity rather than just its symptoms. In that sense, expanding our understanding does more than change the language of food security. It changes the strategy from managing food shortages to building a society in which fewer people become food insecure in the first place. That's it for now. Ciao.
Thanks, Vera. Appreciate your thoughts as always. Jerry and I are back to wrap up this edition of Food Secure Nation in just a moment.
Food Secure Nation is sponsored by Know Better, Do Better. Engaging change makers, charting solutions, and driving progress for food security in America. Once again, here are Dr. Phil Knight and Jerry Brisson.
He's back, Jerry Brisson, and you're going to tell me what Vera meant.
I think Vera was good. I love Vera. She is so helpful in terms of finding a lot of information, summarizing it, and making it make sense. And I really enjoy working with her. She's a well-trained staff person by now, our AI research assistant, Vera. So
she's much more than a staff person. She is an influencer.
Yeah, she's an influencer. That's exactly right. And you know, I think this is a particularly good example of using AI to help explain something as complicated as the six dimensions of food security and boil it down to some very basic things. I like how she said that by changing the framework from two dimensions to six, the first thing you're going to see is better agency. That means people being treated with more respect. That means people finding places where they feel like they belong and are welcomed. And she points out what happens is you have earlier participation. You have a greater percentage participation. You have people taking more advantage of what's being offered almost immediately as soon as you change the dynamic of how people are treated when they go to get help. And so by adding that agency dimension, which increases utilization, another dimension, you are fulfilling the promise of availability and access. But without that, you are having less of that promise because those things aren't addressed. So I like how Vera talked about that way more simply than I just did. And then moves on to talking about how the long-term picture, though, has got to be about sustainability and stability. And in a world that's constantly changing, how do you create programs that are both stable, meaning they're available when people need them, no matter what's happening in the world, and sustainable, meaning they're the kinds of programs that are worth keeping for the long term because of the impact they have, and there's no, you know, bad things going on as a result of what they do. So, I mean, trying to make sense of that, people talk about, do entitlements make people dependent? If they do, that's an example of a bad outcome, right, from a good intention. Well, how do you understand that? How do you begin to put language around whether or not that's happening is part of the work of stability and sustainability. You've got to have answers to those questions. And when you do, you have systems that last longer and do more. So I just talked for twice as long as Vera to say two of the 18 things that she said, but I really like the way she made it simple and now let me make it more complicated.
Yeah, now, thanks for explaining that. I'm more confused than I was. You definitely moved the cookies off the right shelf. So
again.
So I hear what you're saying, because the six dimensions of food security, as you've outlined them, if you embrace that at all, like you said, historically, food banks have embraced two of those. Now the other four are coming into play, And why are they coming into play? Well, one of the things is because people doing the work and people funding the work are no longer just satisfied with outputs. Yeah. Even though outputs are great, they're the foundation, it's not enough. Because you said earlier in the show that the food insecurity rate has stayed pretty fixed between a range for about 25 to 30 years. So people who are doing this work are not satisfied.
And they shouldn't be. And God bless them. That's exactly how the world should work. When you do something good and it does good things, but it's not enough, you got to rethink, right? You got to, what do we say? Refocus, reset, and reestablish. Let's go.
Right?
Let's keep going. I can tell you the people that I knew in this work 30 years ago never thought it would get this far. They didn't have any idea we would be able to do as much as we can do today. And one of the things we've learned by doing as much as we can do now is we still have to get better. You can't just do more. You've got to do more and better. And so more and better. How many times have we talked about that on this show, right?
Yeah.
But that's why you refocus, reset, and reestablish. It's not because what was done before wasn't celebratory or worth celebrating. It's because one of the things we learned is we got to do more and better.
Well, I'm thinking about upcoming guest that's going to be on the show in a few weeks, Matt Habash, who out of Columbus, Ohio, And Matt's been in the work a long time. But he said something recently, and I think it startled a lot of people in the Feeding America network. And what Matt said was, you know, it's okay to distribute less food because you have other programming and other innovations, other things that are doing the work of all six dimensions, so the food is not needed as much. It's okay not to have as strong outputs when you have better outcomes.
Yeah. You know, back again, these back in the day stories are for old people, but we're old people, so we're allowed to have them. When pounds were the biggest thing that food banks were measuring and talking about, there was all kinds of habits where you'd get, you know, as much watermelon as you could because they were heavy. So you could report a lot of pounds. Now, there's nothing wrong with watermelon, but at some point, that's not really the point, is it?
Yeah. Potatoes, onions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, at some point, you got to look beyond the pounds and stop giving away one of something heavy when, you know, five of something lighter would be a lot better for families.
Well, it goes to the conversation we've been having about, you know, what gets measured gets inspected and becomes expected. And so that often gets misquoted, but that is exactly the right quote.
I'll misquote it soon. I promise.
I no doubt about it. Well, this was a good show, Jerry, to talk about the time we are in at this period of time for the work and the time to refocus, reset, and reestablish about what the mission truly is for those of us working to create a food secure nation. Time for a little food for thought. I reminded everyone in the show something Jerry said years ago that stayed with me. Jerry said, until food banks can artfully discuss the impact the food makes in people's lives, we will struggle to communicate our value and our impact. I think that's much more than communication. The conversations we have shape how we think, and how we think shapes what we measure, and what we measure influences where we invest our time, our resources, and our energy. For years, we've celebrated outputs, and we should. Every meal distributed, every family served, every pound of food shared represents compassion in action. But we can't stop there. The next chapter is celebrating outcomes, healthier families, stronger communities, greater stability, and more people becoming truly food secure. Changing that conversation is the first step toward changing the outcome. And changing the outcome, well, that's the first step in creating a food secure nation.